Hey, it's Mike from GoCellPhoneRepair.com, and here is the audio version of today's YouTube live stream about phone repair stuff. Today we're talking about the new iPhone edition, which is expected to be announced tomorrow. I did not get my audio captured the way I planned to, so this is extracted from the video. Next week, we should have better sound quality, but hopefully you can understand what I'm saying. All right, so it is about 2 minutes till. I wanted to start this stream and make sure that everything is working properly, give people a chance to come on here. And the reason is last week or a week or so back, I had a few technical difficulties, and I won't go into that right away. But mainly, what I wanted to talk about today is the success or anticipated success and or failure of the next iPhone, which is going to be announced tomorrow. This is obviously the big thing going on in wireless this week, so I definitely wanted to address this. And my question isn't probably going to be exactly what it looks like on the surface. You know, you could ask someone, will the next whatever the iPhone is going to be, will it succeed? And of course, there are going to be a lot of people who say, of course, it's going to succeed. It's an iPhone, you know, and even if you don't love this new iPhone that's coming out, because they have such a successful track record with handheld devices, there's a certain wave that they're riding on, you know, and at a point, Apple can do no wrong to their loyal followers. Now, what makes this phone the most different, I think, from my perspective, and I'm talking as someone who repairs broken phones. So if that makes any difference, you know, rather than coming from the perspective of a consumer, where I say, well, here's what I think about a phone that I use. I like to look at them from the other side of the counter. You know, when we see customers come in day after day with problems with their phones, you know, whether it's physical damage or software issues, you know, there are a number of different things that happen with handsets. And this is a game changer because it will be the first mainstream, I should say, handset that will be available to the public that breaks the $1,000 mark. Now, as you know, $1,000 isn't that much more than $999, but it does make a big difference when it comes to perception. We've known this for a long time. If you ever look at a sale and it says $999, for some reason, even though we consciously understand that $9.99 and $10 are pretty much the same thing, there is something that registers with us subconsciously in the back of our mind, and that one less digit makes a big difference when it comes to people making buying decisions. So the fact that this phone may very well be at or above the $1,000 mark could make a huge difference. Now, I also question why we are going to be more than likely announcing or seeing an announcement of a brand new, completely redesigned model. And at the same time, there's a good possibility that there, you know, almost inevitably will be an iPhone 7S and an iPhone 7S Plus. So when you look at it, historically, Apple, with one exception, and that would probably be the iPhone 5C, they generally stick with two models. You know, first we had one, and then when they went to the larger size screen, you had your choice between the two. Now, the fact that we're going to have an iPhone 7S and a 7S Plus and this brand new technology coming down the line, I believe may have something to do with their marketing strategy and their idea or kind of anticipation as to how the public will receive or be skeptical about this new phone having such a higher price point. So there's always the possibility that people can fall back and say, you know, well, I still want an iPhone. I still want a new iPhone. I want to upgrade, but I don't necessarily need to get this $1,000 phone. Well, now you have choice B and C, which will be, of course, the iPhone 7S and 7S Plus. So with that in mind, I think tomorrow when we get to launch day, another thing that we have to consider is that it's at the point now where most people who want an iPhone and have a phone already have an iPhone. So what I mean by that is that, yes, I know that there are a lot of people in the world who don't have a wireless phone, period, don't have a cell phone. And there are obviously people who would prefer to have an iPhone but don't. But for a good majority of the people that are at least within the US market and probably in many markets worldwide, if you want an iPhone, at this point you probably have some sort of iPhone. Hey, how's it going? Glad you could join. I know this is short notice. I just kind of threw this out there. What's up, Yunus Gamer? Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. I did this short notice because I was having some technical difficulties and I really didn't want to invite a whole bunch of people to a party and then not be able to facilitate that meeting. So it looks like my live stream is working well today. If anyone sees any lag or anything going funny or humming noises coming through on my audio, please let me know. Also, keep in mind there is probably a good 5 minute lag here. So anything that you put on the screen, you won't see me respond to it for a good 5 minutes. I always thought that live streaming meant live, like right here and now, but we're not at that point yet. So far today, I've got great upload speed. I actually got cut off in the middle of a live stream about a week and a half ago. And it was, long story short, what happened is someone plugged into the wrong thing. So it wasn't necessarily my own ISP's problem, or fault, but, according to them, it was their competitor that tried to tap in their line and they crossed some wires up and we had noise coming through and that's what screwed up my upload connection. Thank you. Awesome, Harvey. Thanks for letting me know. I would really hate to sit here and just, you know, talk at people or talk to people and then it looks like crap. So my goal has always been to it, you know, no matter what the information is, hopefully at least it's clear, you know, hopefully you can see what's going on there. So getting back to the topic though, I think, and I'd love to hear everyone's input on this, you know, Apple has really got a big challenge ahead of them when they release these new phones because a lot of people already have the phone that they want or they have an iPhone. So there's not this thing where, you know, I'm tired of this other phone that I have, this BlackBerry or this, you know, whatever it is, LG or could be Samsung or Android or whatever it is you're frustrated with. And now I'm switching over to iOS because most people who wanted to do that have done so at this point. So what you're looking at are two very separate groups on each end. You know, you have one group that is going to buy whatever Apple releases next. And I am just going to sit here in the middle and not criticize either side, but just as an observation, you can assume that we have a certain number of loyal people who are going to upgrade to the latest, greatest iPhone, whatever that may be. And you're going to have another group of people who don't want to buy an Apple product, and that's fine and dandy. But what's really going to make a difference here is the people in the middle who say, you know, I bought the iPhone 7, I'm happy with it. Do I really want to upgrade to the iPhone 7S? Do I want to buy the new iPhone edition and spend a lot more money? And this is going to be a crucial point in time for Apple, especially after they see this, the ending quarter of 2018's earnings. You know, they really have a big hurdle ahead of them, and that is to convince people that you need to buy this new iPhone. This new edition iPhone is going to be a life changer. You know, the 7 and the 7S aren't, or 7S and 7S Plus aren't going to be good enough for you. And if you really want the top, hey, from Saudi Arabia, how you doing? This is really awesome to be able to have in Brazil. I almost missed that, Rodrigo. How are you? This is really cool to have people from all over the world. I love that about technology. You know, you think by now it should bring us all together. And if we ever evolve past our whatever differences we have throughout the world, we won't have to worry about wars anymore. But we are not at that point yet, unfortunately. So I wanted to put up a little something here. I know it's 9/11. This is an important day for people in the US and for a lot of people worldwide. I don't want to stick on that subject for very long, but I do want to acknowledge we've lost a lot of people all over the place on, you know, from all sorts of origins, and it's a sad thing, and I hope that we move past this kind of stuff at some point. Hello from Greece. When will people not learn not to buy iPhones? You have so much freedom with Android. And yeah, so you are definitely going to be in that segment, I think, who says that you don't want to look at the new iPhones, and I understand that. And to answer that question, I don't think there's ever going to be a point in time where we all buy the same phone. And I really hope that that doesn't happen. I hope that everyone doesn't become a fan of Apple and everybody doesn't become a fan of Android, because we want to have that competition within the marketplace. And I stated this many times, I'm really looking forward to a point where we have a third competitor, because right now you've got Apple, you've got Samsung, they're dominating things, at least in the US. Now, with you guys being all over different parts of the world, you probably have a completely different perspective on this. You may have some other companies that are competing within your market, but in America, in North America at least, you know, Apple and Samsung are the vast majority of the handsets that are on the market. And that creates a not so much of a competitive environment, or at least the type that we would like to have. You know, if you have one person that sells everything, we have to have someone jump in and regulate that so that they don't monopolize it and take advantage of everyone. But when you have two competitors, you really have what we call a duopoly. So if there were any sort of unwritten, you know, behind the scenes agreements between Apple and Samsung, they could say, hey, you know what? We're all going to start selling phones that go for $1,000 a piece. And then what do you do? And this was my other question. If Apple is able to pull this off, if they're able to convince a significant number of their customers that, yes, you should drop $1,000 on a phone, this is going to be a big thing because, and I've said this before, you know, Apple could print an Apple on just about anything, and there would be a certain number of people who are loyal enough, or if you want to call them fanboys or whatever, you know, whatever your perspective is, they are going to buy that product, whether it's a watch or a pen or a tablet or a computer, you know, that's fine. The question is, once you break that $1,000 mark, where is the limit from there? Okay, so if we can, if this happens, if we see the iPhone edition going for $1,000 a pop and people are buying it, what's going to happen next year? Well, the logical thing to do would be to create a $1,200 phone, or at least an $1,100 phone and $1,500 phone. And, you know, where is the point where people say, you know what, there's just no way, no matter how loyal I am to this company, that I can justify spending that amount of money? And I'm sure there will be some very creative financing options available for people. $1,000 for a phone is getting too far to their laptop territory. And that's another good point. You know, when you start bumping up against the point where you can get something like a, you know, a MacBook Pro getting close to that price range, then there's probably going to be that situation. If you remember a few years back, they were really concerned about the cannibalization of their laptop market because of what the iPad price point was, what its capabilities were, and people were actually transitioning. So, you know, at least so far, they're sticking with selling all of the, you know, this entire line. You can get a phone, you can get a tablet, you can get a laptop, but at some point, you don't want to lug all this stuff around. And I agree completely. When you hit that $1,000, and again, it could be $995, and it wouldn't have quite as much of an impact as when you hit the $1,000 mark. So place your bets. You know, I'm really wondering what the outcome of this is going to be, whether it's going to be a success, you know, defined as it really catches on. Everyone decides, hey, I have to have the people in the middle who were planning, you know, every year they get a 7S, they get whatever the next model is going to be, and they say, no, I have to have the latest, greatest. And at the same time, I believe that Apple has enough business sense probably to think this through like they do with many things. And their answer every year has been the same thing, and that is to create more of a demand than there is a supply. So I think what we'll see is people lining up at stores on the day that the phone comes out. They will sell out of them quickly. You might, if you want to gamble and make an investment, probably buy up a bunch of iPhone editions and hope that they are in short supply during Christmas season, and then you can resell them for a premium. That's not something I would do, but I can definitely see that happening. So we'll have to wait and see, obviously. I think personally, I like to wait until the second generation of any form factor comes out. So if there's an iPhone 7, I am really looking forward to the 7S to see if they correct any issues that were present on the 7. You know, if you go back with the iPhone 6S, they improved on the frame because they had some problems with the iPhone 6 being too flexible, a little too lightweight. On the 5S, they tried to fix the problem with the power button that they had with the 5 and so forth. And it kind of goes back every generation. You know, you can't really fully test a phone until it's been out in the wild for a few months and having a variety of users put it through the test. You know, you can only do so much in a laboratory. So we'll wait and see. But I'm really curious to find out not so much what the iPhone edition looks like or even really what it does, but rather how it's going to go over with the public. Is that going to be something that they say, well, we're not going to have an edition phone the next year, you know, a super premium above $1,000 mark, or will there be enough of them sold that they can justify the manufacturing costs that will go into something at that price point? We'll have to wait and see. Now, the question on the other hand, and this is for anyone who's in the business, and even if you're not, I'm in the phone repair business, and I saw a headline a couple days ago. It says, the next iPhone could put 15,000 repair companies out of business. And what they were getting at with that statement is that the iPhone was, or the iPhone edition originally was supposed to have the Touch ID moved to the display. So let me grab a phone. So if you don't remember, back in the days of the iPhone S5S, we ran into this problem called error 53. And what that was is if you had a fingerprint scanner on your phone, so any iPhone 5S basically, if that fingerprint scanner on the home button, which was stored here, became damaged and you went to restore or update the software in your phone, it basically would be bricked. So the entire phone became disabled when there was damage on the Touch ID system. So after a lot of people complained and said, hey, you know, I'm in a remote location, I broke my Touch ID on my phone, that is not a good reason to disable every function on my phone. In fact, not that many people actually use the Touch ID function. So it seems fair that you should have access to all of the other functions on your phone, assuming you can get past the lock screen. So if you've got a PIN code on your phone instead of a Touch ID, if the Touch ID stops working, that doesn't seem like a good idea to disable 100% of the phone's functionality. You know, put yourself in a situation where you need to make an emergency phone call. If your phone is disabled just because the home button isn't working properly, that seems like kind of a silly idea, right? Well, Apple changed their tune after a lot of people complained. They went back and they updated the software so that if your Touch ID doesn't work on your iPhone 5S, you can still restore it. You can still use the phone. You will only lose the functionality of the Touch ID. And everyone was kind of relieved and happy about that because it just doesn't make a lot of sense to shut down something just because it has one minor problem. Well, the idea initially on the iPhone edition was that the Touch ID would be located in the touch screen. So anywhere that you touched on the surface of the screen would be able to read your fingerprint and unlock your phone for you. Now, supposedly, the rumor is that they have delayed that and it will not be included in the iPhone edition. They're actually going to be switching over to a 3D facial recognition system for those who want to use that. Personally, I don't use Touch ID. I wouldn't use a facial recognition. I wouldn't donate my DNA or anything else, you know, outside of people who have a reason to need that. You know, no private corporation needs to have my fingerprint or my 3D image. Now, if you choose to use that, that's fine. That is entirely up to you, and I don't criticize anyone who does. But here was the thing about it. A lot of repair stores were panicking because what they immediately figured out is that if the Touch ID is built into the screen and we as third-party repair shops cannot fix a Touch ID, okay, we can't fix the Touch ID on this phone or any other iPhone. We can restore the phone, we can restore functionality to broken screens, broken LCDs, replace batteries and so forth, but we cannot replace a non-functional Touch ID. Well, if the Touch ID is all over the surface of the screen and it stops working, that means that we cannot replace the screen. What is the number one repair that people need performed on their iPhones? That is a broken screen. So just for the record, the sky is always falling when it comes to lots of different parts of business, but specifically for repair businesses, it's, oh, this next phone is going to put everyone out of business because it's going to be too difficult for us to offer third-party repairs. Well, so far, that hasn't happened. The ritual that we go through every year when people panic or a competitor opens down the street or Apple adds some new function to their phone, you know, we go through that on a regular basis. Oh, what are we going to do now? This is going to put us out of business. So far, we've been able to stay around. I think that Apple's sales will drop significantly till 2019 because they keep removing features and reinvent them again for a greater price. And here's the funny thing. I know I'm switching subjects here, but I'm trying to keep up with the comments. When I took this phone apart, this iPhone 7, and I wish I had held on to it, but I put the flashing logo in here and it just doesn't photograph well. There's a logo actually flashing on the screen. Let's try it without the lights. So maybe, yeah, you just can't see it. It's so weird. It just doesn't really, let's see, turn back on here. Anyhow, I put this flashing logo inside of my iPhone 7. And I got to tell you, unless they were purposely reserving space around the battery compartment so that the battery would have kind of some breathing room or maybe to cool down, there seems to be enough room inside of this iPhone 7 for a headset jack if you really wanted to put one there. So I agree. It looks like they're taking things away for a reason, other than, you know, we can't include it anymore. And there's actually a guy who did a DIY where he added a 3.5 millimeter headset jack to his iPhone 7. I wouldn't recommend it. Apparently, he spent a lot of money, but he was able to modify his iPhone 7 so that it has a headset jack. Now, I know that, you know, plugging things in isn't like really moving forward either, though, because we are working more towards having things wireless, you know, being untethered, not having to be connected to something. But what you're saying, Harvey, I agree 100% that what they're looking at is, you know, they've come up with so many features, and at a certain point, you have to hold something back so that on the next release, you can include it, or you can incentivize people to buy things. And Apple is not the only company that's guilty of doing this. But if you look at something like the headset jack, it's a pretty good indication that they said, hey, you know what, we're going to take this away so that we can sell you something else to make it work. I did a video about a year or so back on the MacBook Pro, where you can't take your iPhone 7 and plug it into the MacBook Pro because it's USB-C, and they kind of switched that and just, you know, kind of left some customers hanging or put them in a position where it's, hey, if you want this to work, you have to buy this other thing to work, to make it work. And I'm not here to argue with anyone on that. I thought it was kind of strange. But, you know, whatever, we can overcome that. But if they keep taking things away, that's going to make it much more difficult. Removing physical buttons are always taking a step backward. That may be the case. It's also probably going to reduce the number of potential problems you could have. You know, traditionally, when you look at electronics, when something is going to go wrong, a lot of the times it's going to be moving parts. You know, if you remember CD players, usually because this thing was spinning around inside on the spindle, the laser would get out of alignment, the ejector tray where you put your CD in, those are the kind of things that break down over time. They made the gears out of like plastic or nylon with little rubber bands that got stretched out of position after a while. So, you know, that may or may not be true, but a lot of times moving parts are going to be the source of the problem. So I'm not sure I'm entirely opposed to removing the home button, for example. I mean, personally, I had been using a phone that had no physical buttons on the screen, you know, back in 2013, and I loved it. I just got used to hitting the menu where the buttons are supposed to be. What I'd be more excited about is a customizable home button, you know, kind of like the assistive touch, where you can put your touch ID, you can put your home button wherever you want it to be. Yeah, if the touch ID... Okay, I missed that one, Rodrigo. But in any case, there is a lot of panic within the repair industry about this next iPhone being a big challenge for us to repair. And I would add to that, if you are a customer, if you are an owner of a new iPhone edition, what happens if suddenly your only solution for a broken screen is to find an Apple store, make an appointment, meet with them to get your phone fixed, or put it in the mail for them to fix it? And I think this is the bigger question, because, you know, there may only be 15,000 repair companies, but there are millions of iPhone users in the world who are not going to, you know, it's not going to be convenient for them to take their phones down to an Apple store. In fact, there might not be an Apple store within several hundred miles from where they're at. And this is why I wanted to mention the Air 53 situation, because Apple kind of came to their senses on that one. You know, there's a certain amount of motivation to generate profit, but you also have to look at the long term and your company's reputation. And it appears as though Apple saw this Air 53 thing going on and said, you know what, it is crazy for people to have their phones completely disabled until they can get them to an Apple store. And I'm hoping that somehow, you know, we will innovate and figure out a way to refurbish these screens if the Touch ID eventually does end up being in the screen itself. But beyond that, I believe that it would be in Apple's best interest to store that secure enclave that has your Touch ID information in the phone instead of the screen. Because again, what happens if you're using your phone and it goes face down on the pavement and shatters, and it's 200 miles between you and the nearest Apple store? In the short term, you will generate some revenue by repairing these customers' phones, but reputation-wise, I think in the long term, you are going to alienate a lot of otherwise happy iOS users. You know, if I was a loyal Apple fan and I've been using their phones for years, and suddenly I find that I have to wait 2 weeks, or I have to drive 100 miles to get to a facility that can get my phone to work again, that would definitely be the last time that I would buy that particular phone. So I suspect that Apple will think this out in the long term and say, you know what, it's kind of crazy to, you know, until there's an Apple store on every block, which is not likely to happen ever, definitely not for a long time, I think it's going to be in their best interest not to make this phone impossible to repair. I mean, that may be the last concern that they have when they're designing something new like this. And maybe they will eventually have some kind of swap out program, you know, like maybe you don't like your iPhone edition, you can trade it towards an iPhone 7S or something like that. But I really think that it would be a bad move for Apple to design a phone with Touch ID built into the screen that if you drop the phone and you crack the screen, it doesn't work anymore. I mean, that would be insane. If Touch ID will be in the screen, that's weird and we're in trouble. But what they want, I assume that is supposed to say, maybe definitely provide all parts to the market will need. Yeah, and this is the other thing. You know, we have this Horizon machine. If you haven't heard about this already, this is the way that Apple will determine whether or not your phone can be fixed. So I've had this experience many times. I've gone to an Apple store on behalf of a customer and taken their phone in with their iCloud info. You know, basically I was taking care of the repair for them and the appointment and everything else at the Apple store, which is another possibility. You know, they have people that will go to the DMV for you and wait in line when you need to get your car registered. Maybe there will be an emerging business where you go out and collect a bunch of customers' broken iPhones and take them to Apple for that. The only problem is they'll only take one appointment at a time. So you can't go in and get like a half a dozen phones fixed on the same day. It's just not realistic. But when I would go to the Apple store and with the iPhone 6 Plus in particular, there was about a 50% chance that they would tell me that they could not fix my customer's phone. And that was because their Horizon or calibration machine had determined that the phone was not repairable. And unfortunately, at that point, you're beyond the spot where you can actually turn back and change your mind, because once they ran the phone on this calibration machine, if it failed, the phone was completely bricked. So you no longer had the option of repairing that phone. And you were offered a discounted price on a refurbished phone, which I have to say was often kind of presented as a new phone, although it wasn't a brand new phone. It was kind of a new to you phone, but it was a phone with an unknown history that had been refurbished. Someone else had damaged it in the past, and here's what you get for $350. Well, I personally, I'd rather take my chances with my phone, even though the screen's broken, I know what it's been through. I'm very good with my stuff. I don't drop it. I don't get it wet. I don't take it anywhere near water. So I feel a lot more comfortable having a third party repair my phone than going to Apple and having them possibly say, well, your phone's out of spec, it's bent a little bit, there's some other problem we found, we can't fix your phone. To me, that's not good, because now I'm looking at buying a refurbished phone and not to mention reducing the warranty. If it's still under warranty, that generally cuts it down to like a 60 day or something like that. So I'm not really happy with that idea. Maybe Apple will provide the parts to the market that we need. And I would love to believe that. It would be great if Apple said, you know what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make OEM parts available to third-party repair stores. And unfortunately, even though I want to see that happen, I suspect that is not going to be the case, because Apple has a trial program out where they've given these Horizon calibration machines out to a limited number of stores. And as you can imagine, Apple is a for-profit company, so their priority is to keep their stock prices up and keep their stockholders happy. Well, if you went out and took, and these are not cheap machines, I want to say they're like around $20,000, $30,000, something like that. I may be off on that by a bit, but it's not a cheap, you know, it's not a small investment. It's a big price up front. They're obviously going to have quite a few requirements as far as what they want from you as a company in order to be able to have access to, and even before they'll even take your money, you're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops to get there so that they'll sell you or lease you or let you use this machine. Well, most of the small businesses that do phone repair are not going to be in a position to make that investment, you know, or to pass these qualifications that Apple will have for them. So that's going to leave a lot of people in a bad position when it comes to iPhones. There are such diagnostic tools in China. The only issue is that everything is in Chinese. Yeah, and I've run into that a lot. I have quite a bit of stuff that comes from China, and this is another factor there. If anyone can do something, obviously there's a source, and China tends to be the source for a lot of things that come through the correct channels and a lot of things that come through the back door. So a lot of the things, you know, including the parts that we get sometimes, come from the same factories, or at least they did up until Apple started cracking down on them, came from the same sources that Apple gets them from. They just don't have the Apple stamp of approval on them. So I agree. If someone figures something out, it will probably be someone in China, and they will want to invest in some translation services. Because I feel you. Every time I get something, it's really funny. You know, I got this WoW stick. By the way, I have a whole bunch of tools that I'm going to be doing reviews on this week. It's like tool week. I've got all sorts of hello, dear emails. Do you want to try out this tool? So absolutely, you know, I want to. And I love this product. This is actually really cool. But if you look at the English on the box, it is WoW. It's so easy and enjoy. So obviously we're missing a word or a comma there. This isn't too bad, but when you get things that are actually in Chinese and you try to run them through Google Translate, it generally makes a mess. So I think there's a real need for translation services from someone who is fluent in written Chinese. I believe that's the correct term. It's typically Mandarin. It could be Cantonese, but I think when they print these things, again, I may be wrong on this, but I think when it's printed, it's actually called Chinese rather than one of those two languages or dialects. So if someone can speak English fluently and probably any other international language and translate it from Chinese, that would be awesome. You should have it. You should contact these companies and volunteer your services and make some money. So beyond this concern about putting repair shops out of business, my main question is this: would you, and I'll probably put a poll up here later on, would you buy a phone, no matter who you are, no matter what you're using, whether it's an iPhone, Android, you know, anything else, would you buy a phone from a manufacturer that could, or from a phone store that could only be fixed by that manufacturer? Okay, so would you buy an iPhone if your only option as a customer for repair is to take your phone back to Apple? And with the same idea in mind, would you buy any other product knowing that you could only take it back to the manufacturer for repair? Would you buy a Tesla if only Tesla could repair those cars? Would you buy a microwave if you knew that only LG or whatever that microwave company was, they're the only place that you can get to go that repaired? Personally, I think my choice is obvious. I'm not going to buy something if it's not convenient for me to have it serviced. So that would automatically eliminate a number of products because I don't have access to those manufacturers, and it's not realistic for me to put things in the mail and wait for it to come back. I hate being locked down to one service. Yeah, same here. That, you know, to this day, I am on a prepaid phone plan, not because I don't want to get an incentive to get a new phone or to get financing on the latest, greatest model, but if I change my mind next month and I want to switch to someone else, I love to have that freedom. So I'm with you on that one too. I'm not sure everyone is. Again, there will be a certain number of people who say, you know, I don't care if Apple says it, I'm going to do it. I understand that. They are very good at building loyalty. We know that within this business. You know, we know that beyond making good products, Apple is great at building loyalty. I mean, I'm sure a lot of other companies are envious of their ability to do that. But I would want to have the flexibility also, and I certainly don't want to be stuck without being able to fix my phone. Now, there was another thing here that I was briefly going to talk about last week, and that was POLED, and that's plastic AMOLED screens that LG has started using, I believe, as of the V30, and it kind of reminded me of something. So what they're looking for is an AMOLED screen that isn't super fragile like most of the ones that we're using nowadays, and that the rumor is the new iPhone will have also, as well as every Galaxy S phone. So here's a question that we hear all the time, and this is for the last 20 plus years that I've been repairing phones. If you're in the phone repair business, aren't you concerned that eventually they will start making phones that can't be broken? And I thought about that question, like the first time someone asked me that, I thought about that question for about 10 seconds. And my immediate response was no, I'm not worried about anyone making anything that is unbreakable, because that would be the equivalent of corporate suicide, right? I mean, how do you make a product that can't be damaged if you ever plan to build to sell another one. Well, we don't even have to worry about that because before a lot of people ever break their phones, they are obsolete. And this is why I'm on an old software version, because every time you upgrade it, it starts going slower and slower. But no, I'm not concerned about unbreakable phones. When the Motorola, was it the Moto Z? One of the Motorolas came out a while ago and they dropped off a rooftop and said, look, see, it doesn't break. Well, I think that was kind of a desperate attempt by Motorola to get back into the game, to have something that people would be excited about. You know, hey, it's not an iPhone, it's not a Galaxy, but it is unbreakable. And we all saw how that went over, kind of like a lead balloon. So I'm not really concerned about any unbreakable phones coming along. And beyond that, I'm definitely not concerned because of planned obsolescence. All of these phones will not be satisfactory to their owners, in many cases, long before they get broken. So they're always looking at getting the next new thing. And if you're in the repair business, you should also be in the buying and selling phones business, because that, I think, is going to be around for a long time. And beyond that, let's remember that Apple may be popular. They may be one of the most prevalent phones in production right now, but they're not the only choice. Also, you know, we still have a lot of people who aren't iOS fans. They're using other things. And there are a lot of other repairs that we can do on iPhones beyond just screen damage. Now, I'll acknowledge that is number one, but there's also liquid damage. There's also battery replacement. There's accessory sales. I mean, there are a lot of ways to supplement your income. You can start giving lessons to people as to how to use their phones. This is another thing that's popped up recently. And I want to say that Best Buy is actually doing something very similar to this right now, where they will come to your house and teach you how to use your technology. So when it comes to be worried about your repair store being shut down, if you're only fixing iPhone screens, I would say yes, you need to be concerned about what else you're going to be able to do. But as far as getting your whole phone shop shut down because Apple has a screen that has Touch ID built into it, I don't think that's really something that's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, it's possible long term, but I think that technology advancing is going to outpace just something like Touch ID being built into the screen. I think holding a phone in your hand and tilting your neck down and having to read this thing like this all day, in a few years, we're going to look back and think that's ridiculous. You know, whether it's some sort of integration into the human body or some sort of virtual display, I think we're going to move beyond handsets, you know, within the next decade easily. They'll never produce unbreakable phones. They sure already can, but they want to sell the phone next. Sorry, this font's really small. Next, they will make so it's impossible from a company to do so. Yeah, I agree. You know, why would they make an unbreakable phone? It wouldn't make any sense from a lot of different standpoints. And who cares when you have planned obsolescence? Error 53 is probably one of the main reasons why I think that disabling a phone just because the screen is damaged would be a terrible idea. So, you know, it's more likely, I think, that there will be a screen that we can replace and you will lose your Touch ID functionality, but you should still be able to fix the phone. I hope. We'll have to see. So let's see. I had a couple other things on the list. By all means, if you have questions or comments, feel free to put them in the chat. Thanks for joining me. Here's another thing. It's actually on the scroller right now, and I do this to remind myself. So if you don't already know, I did a video a while back about net neutrality. I'm a strong believer in net neutrality. For many reasons that I don't have enough time to explain right now, but this is an interesting one to me here. One of the big companies came out recently and said, don't worry, even if net neutrality goes away, we won't throttle your connection. And what that means is that they're claiming that they won't go in and pick and choose what you can watch at full download speed and then limit other things. And if you want a good example, someone actually posted a rate plan for a wireless carrier in Mexico recently, and it says, you know, you get X megabytes of this, but you get free unlimited access to this, this, and this. It was like Uber, Twitter, or something else. And you can see kind of the conflict of interest going on there, where if you say, yeah, your cable provider is going to give you unlimited access to their movies, but not this other company's movies or this particular channel or whatever it is. You know, so they came out and said, don't worry, we're not going to throttle your bandwidth. And I just have to say that, you know, that's a nice thing to say, but I would like it better if you can't throttle bandwidth. I feel a lot more comfortable with that not being legal for you to do than you, as a large corporation, giving me your word that you're not going to do something, because I think we all know what that's worth. Now, I will have to give credit, and this is the situation that I run into a lot of the times, and that is the people at our level. You know, the people that we interact with a lot of big companies, they're great people. You know, they just want to have a job. They want to keep doing what they're doing. And a lot of them do very well with what their, you know, whatever their task may be. I called into the call center when my bandwidth died. You know, my upload speed went from 30 megabits per second down to like 4. And that's why I had to cut my stream off last time. I call in and I talk to the usual, you know, hey, have you tried reinstalling Windows? You should reboot the modem and so forth. And obviously I had done all of the things that you would normally do to diagnose that problem. And I knew that there was a problem with my upload speed going through the modem. So either the modem was faulty or there was something between here and the node or between the node and the ISP that was causing that problem. Well, I got the techs out here and of course they figured it out in like record time. These guys were awesome. They got me up and running again. I can stream. And for those people, I have no negativity whatsoever. You know, they're normal people like you and I doing their job. But the people who control these large companies tend to often conflict with what's in the best interest of their customers. And that's my frustration with it, is that we're pretty much a number to them. So, you know, outside of that, you're dealing with customer service. They're just trying to do their job. And these guys did an awesome job. I'm up and streaming again. So I'm very excited about that. Outdated software may brick your phone before it gets physically damaged. I have old Android phone that cannot connect to Google Play. In Southern California, UVerse is already throttling YouTube. Yeah, I gotta say, when I was doing my stream last time, I was very suspicious that in the middle of my YouTube live stream, my upload speed just like died. You know, and the first thing I thought was, okay, now I have proof they're doing something funny. But of course, I didn't want to jump to conclusions. It ended up being a situation where, according to them, their competitor plugged into the wrong thing because they all share these lines and tap into each other's stuff and they kind of screwed things up. Outdated software may brick your phone. I got to say that updating your software may not brick your phone, but it will often cause problems. So I tend to stick on whatever operating system works for me, because as you probably noticed, you may not have noticed, is that every time you upgrade your software, your phone generally will run its processing a little bit slower, you know, tiny bit. In fact, it's not even noticeable unless you take a phone that's never been upgraded and set it next to one that's got the latest software update, say a year and a half, 2 years later, and it's like night and day as far as how fast they operate. Well, as you can imagine, just like a computer, every time they build some new software update, it is designed for their flagship model. So unless you're running the latest, greatest model that they have, they might still allow you to have that update, but it's not always in your best interest. So outside of security patches, I got to tell you, I rarely update my software. You know, unless they say, hey, this is a real security threat, you need to get upgraded. My phone does what I want it to. I'm probably not... I don't geek out to the degree that some people do. Like, I don't need to know what the latest operating system does on my iPhone. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, it works just fine. Hola. Yeah, that's really scary. If UVerse is already throttling, because they're not supposed to, at least I don't think as of yet, you know, unless they get some legislation passed, which in all likelihood they will. I mean, I am entirely opposed to it. I am, you know, putting information on my channel. I will probably attend some town hall meetings that come up so that I can at least ask some questions and try to get legislatures thinking about what they're doing and, you know, try to keep them on the right side of history. But I have a strong suspicion that with the amount of money that these large companies have, they are doing some serious lobbying in order to do away with net neutrality. And it will probably be after the fact when people finally say, hey, what happened? You know, this isn't cool. I don't like what is going on with my ISP. And you'll have another group of people who, you know, are just at the age where they don't really have any too much concern about that. And this is the weird way that laws that are not in our best interest get passed. And that is, they push them through, they go into effect, and then someone who has never really paid attention to it doesn't really notice it. And they're still at an age where they're not too worried about it. And by the time they reach, you know, 18 or whatever the voting age is, or the age of awareness of how this impacts them, it's not anything different from what they're used to working with, you know, what they're used to dealing with. So I make this joke every once in a while. You know, when I was a kid, there was a saying that people would say, hey, it's a free country, do what you want. And the funny thing is, you don't hear that expression anymore. You know, there are a lot of expressions where people would say, hey, you can do this if you want to, and you can't do that anymore. And to me, I'm old enough, you know, for the next few years, I'll still be around and I'll remember, no, it wasn't always like this. But there are a lot of people in this generation who will grow up with whatever the status quo is, and they will not really know what it was like to have things be different than they were before. And if you grow up with throttled ISPs where they pick and choose what you're able to watch, and you grow up with net neutrality and you don't know anything different, the chances of that reverting back to the way it was before are not very good, especially if there's not a big, you know, a large amount of money behind legislative efforts to get people to vote against this stuff. So I hope it doesn't go through. I suspect that it will. It's very unfortunate. But what can you do? You know, you can try to spread a message, which is, you know, going to go so far. You can retweet it. You can go to some town hall meetings and speak up. You can call your legislatures. If you go to battleforthenet.com, you can get some information on who you can connect to directly. You know, you can actually call and let them know how you feel about it, and hopefully they'll pay attention to you if you're a registered voter. But, you know, beyond that, I don't know that there's a whole lot that we can do. Okay, let me get back to my ticker, because I have covered the majority of everything else that I had on here. I did want to mention I've got a whole bunch of tools in, so I don't want to discourage anyone from buying tools if you need them for phone repairs, but I do want to mention this. I just did a video on this Wow Stick, and the reason I'm telling you this is because I want to show you things that I believe in. So this right here, this is the Wow Stick. It's basically a battery-powered electric screwdriver, which will make your life a little easier if you're dealing with something that has a whole lot of screws in it. You probably won't use it for, you know, taking Penelope screws out of an iPhone, but if you're taking screws out of the back of a Galaxy phone or a Motorola, it definitely comes in handy. They're very reasonable. They're like $25. So I'm fully confident that if anyone has one of those, they would use it. I will also be reviewing this later on this week. This is the Baku, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, 7276. I have been waiting for this screwdriver for a long time. Why? Because it has every single bit you will ever need for an iPhone, up to the iPhone 7, because I don't know what the new iPhone is going to have. But you know how they're always changing and adding a new bit? You know, there's the pentalobe, then there's a standoff driver, now we have the trilobe driver. Well, this screwdriver has currently every bit that you need for every iPhone that you could work on. Plus, I want to say it also has a 1.2, so if you're working on MacBooks, it's got that bit also, all in one package. Surprisingly, I had a vendor send me this, Kingston Precision Toolkit, and it also appears to have all of those bits inside. So I'll be reviewing this one later, let you know what I think about the quality, and you can actually see them in use. But I'm really excited about these because, as you can imagine, when you're repairing phones, unless you're using individual drivers, it's kind of a pain. You can't really go out and buy one set that does everything. You know, there's always one missing screwdriver. It looks like we have that problem solved. We can get everything in one package if that's something that you're looking for. From Xiaomi. Yes, exactly. I forgot to mention that. So here's an interesting thing. And by the way, when I talked about competition, Xiaomi, while it is not really as well known here in the US, in China, they have surpassed Apple as the number one selling brand of cell phones. So, you know, if anyone was positioned to compete with Apple and Samsung in the US, I think Xiaomi would be the one. Hopefully we'll see more of their phones over here. You know, a lot of times if you buy their phones, you have to buy the international version, have it unlocked in order to use it in the US. But we really need a third competitor. And I think that that company is actually positioned perfectly to expand into the US and start selling more handsets here. How's the warranty for the bits on the screwdrivers? That is a good question. I am going to answer that when I do the review. I'm going to look at the package quickly. I don't want to waste a lot of time now, but I honestly don't know the answer to that, Harvey. I will let you know. And that is a legitimate concern. I use one particular screwdriver set. I don't generally break bits, but I do phone repair training. So we get to put our tools through a variety of different people, you know, using them. So some people are much harder on tools than others. And I haven't had too many problems. I have actually had a couple issues with one of the iFixit drivers, and it's actually the magnet that holds the bit inside the driver. That thing, for some reason, they stop working, or the magnet falls out and they won't stay inside. There's one, it's a little red screwdriver kit. I think it's called Bonafide or something like that. And that one is notorious for having bits break. And I'm not sure what the warranty is on that, but I will answer that. As soon as I do the review video, I will definitely answer those questions. But off the top of my head, I'm not sure what the warranty is. But one interesting thing that was really cool about this one is that you can, it takes a standard size. I think it's like an 1/8 inch bit. You can take bits from something like the iFixit kit and it fits into this screwdriver. So they are interchangeable, which is pretty cool. But the ones that it comes with, they are definitely not chrome. So they're not CRV. I'm not sure what they're made out of, some sort of other hardened metal. And I'll give you as much information as I can. Thank you for reminding me though, because that's probably a question that I leave out a lot of my videos is what is the warranty period? So I will definitely include that one on there. Let's see, Apple's Horizon machine we talked about. We won't throttle. Let me look at my scroller real quick and see if I forgot anything. Repair companies going out of business. No, I think that is it. So I am looking forward to see what Apple's big announcement is going to be tomorrow. I am going to stick around here for a minimum of like 10 more minutes because what typically happens is I end the stream and then after I get off, I see that questions are scrolling through here. So where is my thumbnail? We'll put something on the screen here. And you know what else is a good, would you ever go to China just to look at the phone repair scene? Oh, wow. That's a good question. Would I specifically for that reason, for what I'm doing right now, I'd like to, I'd love to travel. In fact, I got a pass for this big telecommunications thing that they're doing in Spain next spring. And the question is only going to be, you know, whether or not I can fund that because there will be a lot of travel expenses involved. But they have invited me to go to, I'm going to go blank on the name. I'd have to pull up my email. But there's a big telecoms conference in Barcelona next April, I think it is. And I actually have an invitation to go. I just need a flight and a hotel. So if I can make that work, I would definitely go to that. If I could jump on a plane tomorrow and not have to worry about the costs involved, I would definitely go to China. I'd love to see what's going on there and in the factories. Oh, a Kickstarter. You know what? That would actually be really cool. I would consider doing something like that. That's a great idea. Kickstarter, fund me. I'll go there and take a bunch of pictures and photos and interviews and give them, you know, whatever information you want me to convey to the manufacturers in China. That's a good idea. Maybe I'll do that. China, I would absolutely love to see the inside of a factory, you know. So yeah, I have no problem with traveling. It would mainly be being, you know, the ability to fund the expenses involved with traveling. In fact, I wanted to take my podcast, which is now a live stream, I wanted to take that on the road and go out and interview people in different phone repair shops. Unfortunately, with video, that would be prohibitive because you can't really live stream from just anywhere you're at, but we can definitely record interviews and then upload them to YouTube. So that's one thing that I kind of have on the back burner at the moment. You know, if I can get there, I want to go and see as many different places as I can and what people are doing when it comes to phone repair. So yeah, definitely great suggestion. I will look at the Kickstarter and promote it on my YouTube page. And I always, you know, have kind of not wanted to add anything like Patreon or please send me money or anything like that. But for something like this, it would be a dollar amount that would be significant enough that yes, I would need some help to make that happen. So yeah, that's actually a cool way to do it. Now, on the other hand, what I have done is I have put tools on my website that people can buy that will benefit my funding needs. So I get a commission. I'm an affiliate for a number of different companies. If you want to help me out, definitely check out my webpage, gocellphonerepair.com. I have lots of links to tools and I in fact sell a few tools. As a matter of fact, give me 1 second. While we're on the topic, I came up with a few and one of my best sellers right now is this standoff driver for the iPhone. Let's take it out of the package. For the iPhone threaded barrel screws that are on the logic board, this is one of the ones that I sell on my website. So it's specially designed with a tip right here at the end so that you can put this on those special standoff screws without your driver sliding around. Well, now I've also got the Baku, which has that bit in included in the package. So as soon as I can give you the warranty information, you'll have all the information that you need for that one. Let's see. So what else do we have? I want to say that's it. Last week I was talking about, you're gonna have to excuse me while I reach again. I keep forgetting to have this stuff ready to go. But my last live stream was going to focus on the topic of scams within the wireless industry. I won't have enough time to go into that in great detail, but I did want to show you something interesting here, if I can find it here. So if you're in the phone repair business, or you're in any sort of small business of your own, self-employed, be aware that there are a lot of people out there who want to take your money for no good reason, and they will send you things like this. I got this recently from the Labor Law Posters, California. Hopefully you can see that. Let's see if I can get that clear. Okay. Labor Law Posters, California Compliance Service Department. Looks very official, right? So I had got my business license a while back, and these guys sent me a bill. Let's see if I can find it here. I must have thrown it in the trash. In any case, they sent me a bill for my labor law posters that I need to hang up in my place of business. And these things were like 40, 50 bucks a piece. You know the big poster that says you have to give people breaks, you have to pay a minimum wage, all that kind of stuff. Well, when you register your business or you get a business license, there is a list of new businesses that these guys look for. And what they do is they say, Harvey just started a new phone repair business. Let's send him an invitation that says you must be in compliance and buy this poster and hang it up in your store or your shop. Well, here's the thing. You can download and print out this poster for free for your state. So if you look up Labor Law Posters California or Labor Laws Posters wherever you happen to be, look up the poster, you can get it for free, you can print it out and hang it up on your wall. You do not need to send 30 or 40 bucks to these guys, but I can imagine enough people do that they're making plenty of money. One of the other popular scams that we used to see all the time in our repair store is people would come in and say that they needed to service our fire extinguisher, because if you have a business, you must have a fire extinguisher. And yes, it must be up to date and it must be serviced, but the fire department will not go door to door saying that they are the only ones that can check your fire extinguisher and make sure that it's okay. And these guys would come in and say, hey, you know, it's X amount of dollars. We need to service your fire extinguisher and make sure it's working. And a very kind of a shady way, I think, to make money, because you go into a situation where someone may not know better. You know, it may be brand new to them. They have no idea. And of course, we all want to be in compliance, right? We don't want to get fines or penalties for not hanging up these posters or charging up our fire extinguishers. So when someone comes in and says, hey, you have to do this or else you're going to be in trouble. I can only imagine the amount of money that goes out to these not quite legitimate businesses, you know, where they're just basically taking advantage of people. And they really should have some sort of law to prevent them from doing that. But I don't suspect that that will happen. So if you own a business or you're thinking about starting one, yes, you must have a business license. If you're in California, you must also have a certificate from the Bureau of Electronics and Appliance Repairs that says that you're authorized to repair electronic devices. Otherwise, you can get in trouble for that. But if you get something in the mail that says, hey, we need you to send us money, be skeptical. There's a lot of garbage out there where people are just trying to take advantage of anyone who may not know better. It's just like those people who paint house numbers, for donations. Yeah, that's another one. I mean, if you come across someone who wants a donation, I want to see some credentials. You know, I want a receipt. I want some credentials that say that you're authorized to do this. And I don't want to see you just holding a bucket with a picture on it that says, hey, this is going to feed starving children, because what's going to keep them from reaching in that bucket and, you know, helping themselves to some of the money that they put in there? It's insane. Opening a new store in the UK. Wish you good luck. Hey, I wish you good luck. I would think there be just as skeptical. You know, if someone comes in, I mean, do your due diligence up front. Make sure you find out what you need to start your business and that you're covering all your bases and doing everything by the book. But when somebody contacts you and says that you owe them money, yeah, be very skeptical. I get the same thing on my iTunes account and my PayPal account all the time. You know, your funds have been limited. You need to click on this link. And of course, when you hover over the link, it doesn't go to anything that starts with paypal.com or itunes.com or apple.com or anything like that. And this one kind of got me thinking, because another thing that would happen, and it was very ironic. Let me say that if someone contacts you by phone or mail or email and says that they are from Google and they are going to help you with your website optimization, I can tell you that Google will not contact you in order to tell you about web SEO at any degree. Okay. So we would get people all the time to say, hey, we're calling you about your webpage and your Google ranking, and we're going to do this, and we're from Google. And I said, you're from Google? Really? Yes, we work with Google. We do. Okay. And slowly the conversation kind of went to from we are Google to we work with Google to we're going to help you with your Google ranking. And, you know, eventually you get through. Google is not going to contact you to help you with your anything when it comes to your SEO. But here was the one that caught me off guard, which was legitimate. We opened an AdWords account. And if you have an AdWords account and you are advertising with Google, they may actually contact you for a consultation to help you with your AdWords account. But obviously, I would ask them some questions that would force them to kind of prove to me that they are who they say they are. Because anyone could call you up also and say, hey, we're from AdWords and we know you have this website. Okay, well, what email address did I use for my AdWords account? Because if they don't have that, obviously they don't know what they're talking about. So you should have heard, I wish I could have recorded the conversation. I almost hung up on an AdWords representative because I said, look, I've been through this 20 times. Google does not call their customers. Well, there's an exception to that rule. And that is if they can get you to spend some money for advertising, they may in fact contact you about your AdWords account. All right, let's see. It's hard here. Somehow I will send you some pictures later on your Facebook. By all means, hey, anyone who has a business, feel free to contact me through Facebook, Twitter, whatever. I love hearing from other small businesses that are doing the same type of thing that I am. And if I can, I will give you any information that will hopefully make your life easier. But that's off. That's awesome. What part of the UK are you actually opening up your store in? Tantawi? I hope I said that right. This font is very small and my ability to pronounce anything is limited. So I hope I'm saying your name right. Wherever you're at in the UK, by all means, anyone want to do a free plug, put your business in the chat. I have no problem with that whatsoever. And it's awesome. We have all adults this week. Last time it was porn, 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 sex, sex, sex. And I don't know why they did that. Do I have WhatsApp? You know, here's the thing. I know how to fix phones. I'm limited. Oh, okay. From York. Cool. I know how to fix phones. I may be somewhat limited in their operation. So everyone in China wants to communicate through WhatsApp. I have installed WhatsApp on my phone. And when it asked me for my phone number in order to complete the account creation, it says that my phone number is not valid. And I've tried every combination of area codes, phone numbers, digits, spaces, zeros at the beginning, and it says that my phone number doesn't work. So I've had to tell all of my contacts in China that I cannot use WhatsApp, at least not on this phone. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I tried to create one through the computer, and then it asked me for a phone number. So I'm not 100% on how WhatsApp works. I will eventually figure it out. For now, you know, I have them just text me directly, email me, whatever. If and when I get WhatsApp, I will add it up here somewhere. Over here, above the phone, hopefully. Prepaid numbers won't work. Well, that explains it. Thank you. So why can't I use a prepaid number for WhatsApp? That's bizarre. But thank you. Now I have an answer to that. So I don't know if I get... I wonder if I got like a Google voice number, if that would do the trick. I'll give it a shot. Let's see. It is 2:59, so I am about ready to sign off on this. I am going to attempt, and I'm only saying that because I am hoping that my internet connection stays where it's supposed to be, but I want to do this live stream at least once a week. More than likely, it will be Mondays, 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I may actually come back and do another one this week, either Wednesday or Friday, but I will have to kind of figure that out. But I know it sucks to say, well, it might be at this time or it might be at this time, so I don't want to say I'm committed to this Friday at 2 p.m. because I don't know if that's going to work out. But not only that, I want to be able to do it every week at the same time, so it's kind of like you don't have to wait for a reminder or notification. But almost next Monday, for sure, I will be here at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for another live stream. I don't want to put my phone number on here, but if you want to email me, it's mike@gocellphonerepair.com. You can email me, and if I can just make sure that, I mean, obviously I know you, but if any bots pick up that email and send it to me, I make sure that it's a real person before I give out my phone number or whatever other. I think I have Skype here somewhere. I'll put that together eventually. And you're very welcome, Marcelo. Thanks for everyone who came on today. I appreciate it. And especially you get Harvey for letting me know that I can't use my prepaid number. I never would have figured that out. Like I went everywhere, meaning I Googled it. I looked at Google and I could not find a solution, and they gave me a bunch of other, you know, possible causes that had nothing to do with what I was doing. So I will either have to get an alternate number for that, or thank you, appreciate that. I'll have to get another number for that. I would like to have WhatsApp. I have a whole bunch of vendors in China that want to be able to communicate in real time. And I know that it's, you know, when you're talking about long distances, it's kind of a headache. So totally understand it. Type it here for sure. I will type my email right now. Let's see. Oh, hold on a second. I have to go back. I'm looking at my virtual chat. That's not going to work. I will type my email address right now. Yeah, I'm not very good at typing either. Let's see, did I get that right? I think I did. Okay, let me double check and make sure that went on the screen. So that should say mike@gocellphonerepair.com. I don't think I hit any extra keys. Like I said, it's really tricky to actually type in the position that I'm in right now because I'm using my laptop as a camera. So that is it for me for this week. I'm going to leave the chat open for about 5 minutes. No problem. Thank you. I'll leave the chat open here for about 5 minutes in case any questions come through. Otherwise, I will see you next week. Same time, same place, if not sooner. Like I said, I'm going to try to get back here. I'm going to try to get back here. Oh, that's funny. Is this today's? That is today's chat. Cool. Let's finish that sentence, Mike. I'm going to try to get back on here later this week, possibly Wednesday or Friday, but most definitely next Monday at 2 p.m. So it's usually the same time. Hopefully it will be cooler. I am cooking inside here. It's like 90-some degrees outside and I'm in the house. And in my area, we don't put air conditioning in homes because it never gets that hot. Well, tell me there's no such thing as global warming anymore because we're having one of the hottest years on record. And last year was like the hottest year on record until this year. So something's going wrong. Something's happening here. And once again, I forgot to hit record on my audio device. So my podcast version of this is not going to sound wonderful, but it is what it is. It is global. I agree. It's happening everywhere. And it must be stopped. Although we may be past that point, unfortunately. Oh, that reminds me, speaking of, before I sign off here, because I am waiting to see if any more chats come through, I am working on a second YouTube channel that will have nothing to do with phone repair. But if you've listened to this live stream, you kind of have an idea as to where my interests lie. I would like to speak more about different types of issues that we face, you know, just us as regular people. And at the same time, YouTube is being very odd about the way that they're allowing people to monetize channels. Long story short, you can't really talk about controversial topics without being penalized or without having your monetization pulled. So I do want to be able to address, separately from this channel, some other issues that have to do with what's going on in the world outside of the wireless stuff. But I'm going to try to do that in a way that is tactful enough so that I don't get banned or, you know, have my channel get in trouble or whatever. It's really sad, but Google, you know, to protect their advertising interests, they've kind of been very strict on what you're allowed to put as a title onto your podcast or onto your live stream. It really sucks. Will you accept fan mail? I'll accept mail if I'm not sure what fan mail is. I'll definitely accept emails. I will try to respond to as many as I can. Just please don't put me on any kind of spam email list because then I have to go through and set up filters. I know that you won't, but I'm just speaking to anyone out there who might be listening. I have some pretty good filters in place, but it's just still a headache. But yeah, absolutely. Hey, reach out. Not a problem. If you want to drop me a line, I do try to answer whenever possible. And I appreciate it if people find something useful here. You know, if you find this helpful or it's done something good for you, by all means, I'd love to hear your feedback.